Hello and welcome. My name is Katie Walker, and I talk all things relevant and also controversial about parenting a child with autism, ADHD, PDA, and other associated mental health difficulties. Welcome to podcast number six. Today's topic is all about taking back some control in what feels like an uncontrollable situation. The situation being parenting a neurospicy child. Wow, it can constantly feel like stuff happens in my world. It seems to come from nowhere and usually ends with my head in my hands. When this happens, it can make you feel anxious, right? It can feel like life is happening to you rather than you having an active part in your life. Yes? Who's with me? So, how can we take back control? Where can I take back control? There is a lot that will have to remain out of your control because if your life is anything like mine, it really does depend on how the autism is autisming that day. Some days are okay, and yet some days the dog can look at my son in the wrong way, says my son, and oh man, we are in for a slightly different way. And whatever plan A I had is now plan B. Sometimes even plan C. One of the biggest worries I have heard from others, but also have experienced myself, is the lack of control as parents that we have when it comes to meetings with professionals. If your child has autism, ADHD, PDA, these meetings are a lot. And so over time, these meetings and ways of working with professionals really can have a negative impact on parental well-being. Although some may argue it's not about parental well-being and actually it's about the child, I would argue that the child relies on the parent. So why would we hinder parental mental health and anxiety when we could strengthen it? I've recently done quite a few social media posts on how professionals can phrase things and how it's unnecessary and outdated. For example, mum is struggling with Harry's behaviour, or mum is struggling to get Harry into school are both good examples and ones I've heard regularly in my personal life. In these cases, we need to try and take back control, challenge and explain that mum is not struggling. Harry is due to his autism. Mum is handling these behaviours just fine, but could do with some understanding and support. Could always write that sentence down and use it in your next meeting. Mum is not struggling. The child is struggling due to their autism. Mum is handling these behaviours just fine, but could do with some understanding and support. It's interesting because in my own personal case, when Harry has had a bad day at school, the professionals don't say that the teacher struggled with Harry's behaviour. They say Harry had a bad morning. So, take back some control if you're hearing these phrases in meetings by professionals and try not to allow these phrases to be used. It's outdated and full of parental stigma. You can indeed challenge them and feel free to challenge them. It doesn't have to come across as rude, but you are indeed taking back some control. Rather than these things happening to you, you can challenge them and explain that the understanding around that is incorrect. These phrases can sometimes be written in reports. If so, if you find that they're written in any of your assessments or reports from school, then you can ask for these statements to be explained with justification or removed. Because these reports can stay with a family right up until a child is 18 years old, so they should not contain parental stigma. The same is to be said for being a single parent. Somehow, this can be and is sometimes used against parents, with separation and divorce rates of 86% for parents with neurospicy children. It's most likely that you will be separated. And in some cases, this can actually be a strength, not a weakness, perhaps allowing each parent respite if necessary. In cases where there is no second parent present within the child's life, that should not be a criticism to the parent that's still available. In fact, it shows great strength. Doing it alone 24/7 is certainly not easy, and can be a complete sacrifice. So you see, you can start to take back small amounts of control in these meetings. You shouldn't be expected to just go along to these meetings and sit quietly. Your voice needs to be heard. Remain in control of how you decide to spend your free time, your weekends, your time where the children aren't in school, regardless of their needs, without feeling that society somehow wants you to isolate. The stigma of being out and about in public has been enough to put people off going out with their children in fear of meltdowns and comments or even eye rolls from others. Please remember, it's not your fault that society has yet to catch up. Remember, you don't need approval from others in society to live your life in a way that ensures that you're not isolating yourself or your children. Most people can indeed be kind. Some, however, do ruin that image, and this can have an impact on parental confidence over time. Meltdowns and stimming, either or both, take your child out anyway, and do not allow others to make you feel any less than incredible. Another comment that I get quite a lot is, or another question even, seems to be around gaining some control within a system that doesn't work. And how do we go about that? Our days or our weeks can be full of emails and phone calls and meetings, and somehow this is all happening to us. We're not getting anywhere. There's no positive outcomes for the child in the short term. And yet, no matter how hard we're trying to be in control or take control and organise these interventions so that particular care needs are met, we're kind of backpedaling the whole time. It's very confusing because a need is a need without diagnosis, says CAMHS and says CENDIAS. Yet some education settings request a diagnosis before help or support can be given. When I say support, I mean the right kind of support for your child in school. So an intervention while in school, not a parenting course. Of course, this right kind of support needs extra funding. And extra funding can mostly only be put in place with an EHCP, in which a diagnosis is necessary. And it's here that we get stuck in the vicious circle. So you have CAMHS and CENDIAS saying a need is a need without diagnosis, but you have some education settings saying that they need a diagnosis in order to gain the extra funding to put the interventions in place. And the two don't tally up. So you'll very rarely get CAMHS or CENDIAS speak to school and vice versa. So the parent ends up almost playing the hot potato in the middle of all of these agencies, trying to facilitate and help with interventions and care needs, but backpedaling the whole time and ending up in a very vicious circle. The system put in place for children with autism, ADHD, PDA, and their families, of course, totally works against them, not for them. However, with that in mind, you can still gain back a little bit of control in amongst this battle and while you are sat on endless waiting lists. And the way you do this is to create your own care plan for your child. It will empower you in meetings for your child with professionals and provide a framework for DLA claims, EHCP tribunals, and school placements, but also interventions. Time to try and take back control rather than being pushed from pillar to post with no positive outcome for the child, other than a very long waiting list to work through. So, on this care plan that you could put together to start gaining back some control, you're going to need three columns. Write it out on paper, type it out on the computer, you choose whatever suits you. So, column one, you need to list your child's needs. Work through in your mind the whole day, from the moment you wake up in the morning until the moment the child settles in the evening, and think of every little, big, and in the middle routine, intervention, and therapy that your child requires, and any struggles they show, and write them all in column one, one by one. Then in column two, this is where you will title it Home Interventions, and you will list everything that you do at home to support with the need. So, for example, in my son's care plan, in column one of the issues is brushing teeth because of sensory demands. And therefore, the home intervention is a certain routine that he has to go through in order for him to brush his teeth. This routine is very long-winded and it's certainly not neurotypical. So I write in exactly what I do, how I do it, where he has to sit, and the different toothpaste that he has to use, etc. So the first column is the child's needs, and the second column is what do you do about them at home? The last column in column three is what does the school do? So school interventions. Now, some may not be relevant. So, for example, like brushing teeth, they don't brush teeth at school, so they won't be relevant. That will stay blank. But there's lots of things at school that you could fill in here. So, for example, any interventions in place due to sensory processing disorder or eating difficulties, social and communication difficulties, emotional regulation issues, any stimming, any attention difficulties, learning difficulties, etc. Now, of course, once this is complete, you can take this to meetings with you, and it can be a really proactive way of really finding out what support is in place for your child with each of their separate needs. And if the school do not cater for a particular need, you can ask them why. Now, always request the answer in writing because this can be used as evidence. Perhaps if you go to tribunal or have an EHCP application and you're trying to prove that more interventions are required or more funding is needed, then the reasons for not meeting a need in writing will help you with this. So you can take this care plan to any meeting with any professional, whether it be CAMHS, whether it be school, and you can point by point ask, what will be done and by whom? And you can take back some control in facilitating this. So, three columns: the child's need, column one, column two is your home interventions, and column three is the school interventions. Remember, you are the expert when it comes to your child and their needs. You know best. You should not and do not need to attend meetings and feel like it's happening to you and sit there in silence. Remind them of what CAMHS and Sendia say. A need is a need without diagnosis. Remind them that if your child is on a wait list, the likelihood is that he or she has autism, ADHD, or PDA, whatever you're on the waiting list for. Because children are not being accepted unless there is a genuine feel that that child meets the criteria for a diagnosis. Remind them that the wait list is up to 5 years, so it's not fair or right to ignore any needs of your child in this time. A need is a need without diagnosis. Remember your own worth, your own value here. Don't doubt yourself. If schools suggest that they will put in interventions to help meet need, ask when will this start and by whom. Try and get some accountability for it. It's okay to ask these questions. You're not being rude by asking them. You're taking control. That's a good thing. If school gives you information of concern at school, such as behaviour problems, show them your care plan. What do you do at home to help with these behaviours? And ask them at school, what do they do at school to help with these behaviours? Ask questions, take control, and write your own care plan. Quite a few people tell me when their child is suffering with EBSA, emotional-based school avoidance, that there is staff members that come to the home for various different reasons. And it's okay to ask questions. A lot of us may say, yes, okay, that's wonderful, and then worry about that meeting and not know why they're coming or who is coming. And actually, we can start to take some control back. So asking questions is okay. If a member of staff is coming to the home to see a child who has emotional school-based avoidance, then you can ask, what does that staff member know? What do they know about anxiety and autism burnout, if that's, of course, what your child is suffering with? If it's not that case and they're not trained in those areas, then why are they coming to the home? You can ask those questions. If your child has a key worker and you use a PDA approach at home, then chances are you're going to want a PDA approach used at school, or at least some understanding of a PDA approach. So asking whether or not that key worker knows a PDA approach is very important. Now, sometimes we can't solve the issues due to funding and lack of resources schools have. It may be that there's no other choice in staff members, but let's still acknowledge the issues. If a staff member asked me as a parent what I knew, I would say I've done three parenting courses, NVR, PDA, and autism courses. And I would say that I found a mixture of NVR and PDA parenting works really well at diffusing behaviour problems at home. And so if that's not being mirrored at school, that may be where the difficulties lie. It's okay to point out these things to professionals. Being called to a meeting to be told your child has done something with no understanding of wider issues isn't going to solve the problem. You leaving the meeting, telling your child off, and taking away the iPad likely won't solve the problem. So do challenge professionals where needed. Like I say, it's not always possible to change things like funding issues and staff training, but understanding is a very bare minimum and is possible from professionals. And it is okay to ask questions. Who is coming to the home? What is the outcome? What are they trained in? It's okay to have a voice in meetings and not just be spoken to. It's okay to have some control in these meetings. After all, it is your child that is being discussed. You can also take back some control at family and friends' houses by setting boundaries for your child's needs, especially with events coming up like Christmas. Take back some control of the day by setting boundaries. Perhaps if you're going to a family member's house, there'll need to be a quiet room or a tent that can be set up for your child to escape to if they become overwhelmed. Perhaps you'll only stay for as long as your child can handle rather than promising a time. Perhaps if people are coming to you, ensure they understand how you manage the day and what help and support you may need. You can't do it all. You can't manage all the neurospicy needs in your house and the interventions, and then do everything for everybody else. I once knew a family who wrote down a set of expectations of what to do if her child had a meltdown. And she wrote them out as letters to people and handed them out a week before Christmas dinner to everybody attending the dinner. Now, initially, out loud, this sounds quite funny, but actually, people preferred it because they knew exactly what to do. Try and take back some control and set some boundaries for yourself. And you can do that wherever your child may be, whether that be in a school setting, whether that be in a home setting, whether it be at your family member's house or a friend's house. Remember that there's no cure for autism, ADHD, or PDA, but we can take back some control even in uncontrollable situations. Finally, gain some control over your own well-being. It should be seen as a priority after the children's needs are met. What you are doing each and every day is near on impossible. That does have an impact on parents' and carers' physical, emotional, and mental well-being, especially over time. Perhaps not right in the moment because we soldier on through because we have to, but I do believe the body keeps score. Get creative with your small slots of time in the day and find some space for you too. That may only be a 5 minute cup of tea and a sit down with the smell of your favorite candle and the phone on silent. Yes, I said it. No notifications in that 5 minutes, please. Or it may be having one headphone in and listening to your favorite podcast, audiobook, or song while the children are on tablets or in the bath. Or it may even be journaling that 10 minutes before bed and brain dumping everything out of your mind onto paper. Whatever it is, even in those small slots of time, prioritize it. Prioritize it over the housework and take control in your well-being too. Small things built up over time and consistently can make a big difference. If you would like some bespoke help in taking back control over some of the behaviours in children with autism, ADHD, and PDA, then visit www.sendparentingbalance.com and look out for the Breaking Barriers Building Belief support groups. They are 6-week support groups that do just that. They help you to take back control within those behaviours. I really hope this podcast has gone some way into helping you see that even amongst chaos, even amongst uncertainty, and even amongst life happening not the way you had planned, long term and also moment to moment, there is room for you to take control. There is a voice in there that needs to be heard, and you know better than you think you do. You can start to take control with professionals. You can start to take control within meetings. You can start to take control when out and about or within other people's houses. You can start to take control by understanding your child's care needs and facilitating how these needs are met and by whom. And you can start to take control over your well-being. Small steps equals big change. Again, if you need any help with writing a care plan or any of the aspects that I have spoken about in this podcast, please visit www.sendparentingbalance.com. Have a look on the services page, and I can offer help in each of these areas. You can also reach out to me on the contact page there too. I hope that you remained kind to yourself today. See you next time.